You are listening to Houston's longest-running sports radio morning show, The Bench with John Granato and Lance Zierlein on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John and Lance.
It's John and Fred. It's not John, it's me.
You're all right. It's a Friday, man.
Yeah, I'm telling you. Plus, I just got wired up with some extra caffeine to knock out that first hour. Hey, that's Freddie D.
Hey,
that's Fred Davis.
Hey,
what's going on,
man? Listen, you know, not to sound all, you know, I've been listening to you since, but I'm going to say that the first two, you know, I've been in Houston in the Texas area now since 2008, and
has it been that long?
I came to Beaumont in 07 and listened to the, I used to listen to Carl Dukes in the afternoon.
Yeah.
And then, I used to listen to you, in the mornings on, 790.
Oh, okay, good.
Back in the day.
A multitude of guest hosts. I mean, a multitude of hosts over there. So I don't know which iteration, but I appreciate it. It's our first time getting to do a...
Yes, that's what I'm saying. It's kind of crazy. Here we are 12 years later. Here I am 12 years later.
Well, let me ask you this off the bat. So the news that broke that I think is really good news for U of H potentially, because U of H has been looking for, even though they've had a conference, you've always had the feeling that U of H has been searching for something more.
Absolutely.
The breakup went very poorly for them when the Southwest Conference disbanded through no fault of their own. There's nothing U of H could do about it. But a story came out yesterday, and then with Texas and Oklahoma going to the SEC, you know, I thought, well, this may spell doom for the Big 12, especially if Iowa State gets picked off into the Big 10, and if this team goes here and that team goes there, does it make any sense for the Big 12 to even still be in play? Are they going to be part of a major factor for the college football playoffs, et cetera, et cetera? And Max Olson, who's been on the show a couple times, I think he's going to be at the Wheelhouse today, as a matter of fact, so you can listen to this. Sam Kahn, Andy Staples, Max Olson were all part of this with their sources. And what they say is Big 12 Commissioner Bob Bowlesby paid a visit to Houston's campus yesterday to meet with school officials to discuss a potential Big 12 membership. The four teams who are being looked at right now are BYU, Central Florida, Cincinnati, and Houston. And the ADs of the Big 12's remaining schools met with Commissioner Bowlesby in Dallas on Tuesday and Wednesday to begin planning for the future of the conference. So one would think that if they met, that all these teams have been discussed. Now, for a team to join the Big 12, you have to have a supermajority. 80% have to say yes.
Oh, of the Big 12 members?
Yeah, and I think Texas, you know, technically Texas and Oklahoma get votes. Now, to me, they should abstain from voting.
I was going to say, I don't see how they don't recuse themselves.
You don't get a vote. But here's some interesting. I think it'd be great for Houston.
It'd be huge for Houston.
I think it'd be great for Houston. You threw a little wrinkle in when we were talking a while ago about Kansas. We'll get to it here in a second. But here's some things that you need to know. So Texas and Oklahoma are supposed to go to the SEC in 2023.
Right.
I mean, I'm sorry,
2025. Right.
2025.
Yeah.
However, here is what can happen. By Big 12 bylaws, they require members to give at least 18 months notice before withdrawing and a fee of 2 years of revenue distribution, a penalty that's expected to be. How much do you think it would be for Texas and Oklahoma each?
Oh, and I'm going to I've seen this because obviously I've been following this being the Jayhawk alum that I am. I want to say it's in the neighborhood of like $85 million. It's
$80 million apiece.
Yeah.
Apiece. The two existing schools would need to give notice by the end of December if they wish to join the SEC by the summer of 2023. I fully expect that to happen.
Yeah.
I think they will make that declaration. I don't think either school is going to have a hard time coming up with their $80 million, and I think that's going to get done.
Well, I would imagine, too, they'll probably do some sort of, you know, dare I say, payment plan. I mean, if worse comes to worse, you know. I mean, and if you're UT, all right, I mean, listen, you can say, and I'm safe face, but I think you owe it to the Big 12, and I think from a legislative standpoint, the state of Texas, I think you owe it to the University of Houston to get them into the Big 12.
Here's what, and this is the other, I need to mention this also. Cincinnati, UCF, and Houston are all members of the American Athletic Conference. It requires 27 months notice and a $10 million penalty for departing members, although the conference
agreed.
In 2019, they let UConn leave on 12 months' notice in exchange for $17
million. I mean, so, what's gonna? I mean,
earlier it costs you more money.
But I mean, and not to demean the American Athletic Conference, but I'm going to. What are they going to do? Okay, I mean, if U of H and M say, "Listen, we're out." What? I mean, what's the AAC going to do? Yeah. Oh, wait, hold on. We're going to restrict me from what? Yeah. You know what I'm saying? I'm out later. I think play in Wichita State and, you know, whoever, Temple.
Well, I think you can get out. So the 12 months notice thing seems to make sense because you say it.
Well, you know, I get why you have. I mean,
you say it, you keep playing.
Yeah, right.
You got to keep playing. And then you pay up that $17 million. Now, $17 million for U of H. Look, if Tillman wants to, and Tillman didn't, it didn't go great for Tillman during the pandemic. $17 million exit fee. I don't even look. I look at $80 million for Oklahoma and Texas, and I think, well, that's no big deal.
Right, right.
$17 million for Houston, though, is that's a lot of money for them. I can't speak to the other programs, but I know that.
But didn't there? But if I'm not mistaken, and I could be speaking out of my rear end here, but I want to say the U of H endowment is pretty well solid.
I don't know. I know Rice is ridiculous. I don't know about U of H's. It may be.
I think U of H has got a bigger.
But their endowment, is it going to be used for athletic purposes, though?
Absolutely. Think about it. If you need, I'll tell you what. And of course, again, people far more educated when it comes to these things than myself. But at the end of the day, you help the profile of your school, right? If I'm the U of H and I'm in the Big 12 now, and I'm in a Power 5 conference, because let's call it what it is. That's why they're adding these four schools. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you're looking at, I mean, we're now getting the skinniest kids in fat camp at this point, okay? Because there's nobody else left that's worth a damn, okay? Because you ain't plucking Nebraska, all right? Even though Nebraska hasn't been squat since they left the Big 12. Colorado ain't bouncing anywhere. We know Mizzou and A&M are comfy where they're at. So, and here's the thing. There's no guarantee that BYU's going to come. Right? I mean, U of H, UCF, Cincinnati, they'd be morons not to go to the Big 12.
Do you think this hasn't been discussed? Like, do you think that this is Big 12 talking, but all these teams aren't on board? Because I haven't even considered that, but what you're saying is maybe the Big 12, maybe BYU wouldn't even make the jump this whole time. I've just been
assuming. Why haven't they yet?
Well, I don't know.
You know what I'm saying?
I think BYU has been interested in moving to a different conference.
Right.
I think they'd like to. I think if you are going to build something that's bigger than where they are, I think they would consider it. I think geographically, it's not the worst geographic move for them.
No, it's not. Not to mention, too, and I mean, listen, when you look at...
Pac-12's not going to be available to them, so Pac-12's not available.
Exactly, right? So I guess the fact that outside of the Big 12, I mean, listen, the Big 10's pretty much already made it clear, listen, we're good with where we're at. The ACC can kind of pick and choose, and they're going to kind of sit back and see what they need to do, but now that they've done this little phony alliance thing, which I still can't figure out what the whole purpose of that is. I mean, if your whole thing was, well, we're just going to schedule... I mean, did you really need to, you know, do some pomp and circumstance to say, oh, we're going to just schedule things? And I mean, okay, great. But no, BYU, and if what you're saying is right, and I don't have a reason to discredit it, okay, so BYU is going to jump into the Big 12. I mean, again, the Big 12's doing everything they can, especially since they had egg on their face with Bob Bowlesby. How does, in today's age of everything gets leaked out in some form or fashion.
Shocking.
How in God's name.
Shocking.
Did OU and UT... For 6 months.
There's two things that will be the greatest non-leaks in history. Number one would be if Michael Jordan really got faux suspended and sent to base and basically joined a minor league baseball team because of a gambling suspension, which he and you know, and they tried to shoot that all down and the one problem I've always
but
had
the story
with that,
but even when they shot it down, it didn't make sense.
No, but here's the thing. It's one of the most shocking elements is that really that never like. If it were true, wouldn't it have leaked at some point by someone? But that was even before social media. In this day and age,
right? The Russians were involved too.
How did they keep this a secret from the people that anyone would have loved to have broken this? It just
absolutely.
Took one person to get their hands on this story, and they would have broken it. How did this stay secret for 6 months? That's incredible.
My guess is it was at the highest of levels. Right. I mean, this was presidents. This was the equivalent of, you know, agents that do the talking for the coaches behind the scenes, floating stories, except instead of floating stories, they just stayed strictly business. I mean, come on, man. You know how these things go behind the scenes. I mean, listen, if they want us, things get leaked when they're ready to get leaked. Right. And so they worked on this thing for 6 months between OU and UT, and then they leaked it when they were ready to leak it.
Yeah. And BYU is independent. So they're an independent team.
They're like the Mormon Notre Dame.
They're kind of like independent West Coast.
Yeah. You know,
independent WAC team, with some of the way they schedule. But Notre Dame continues to do the things that they
do. And you
can't
play on Sundays.
Can't play on Sundays.
They're the Chick-fil-A of college athletics. They're the Chick-fil-A. They do not play on Sundays.
They're actually very much the Chick-fil-A.
They are. Very much.
They're very much the Chick-fil-A
of college football. Ain't no specials at Chick-fil-A or BYU in June. Tell you that much.
So as a Kansas grad, what do you think about all this? Because the wrinkle you threw in is that KU could look to leave. But we know KU's a basketball school. You guys don't even count for football.
No, we don't.
You don't get
a football vote right now.
A football vote right now.
Not right now,
Mangino's not walking through that door, Freddie.
And I'm okay with Mangino not walking through that door anymore. Listen, after he flailed over at Iowa State, it is what it is. I've got nothing but love for the big man. He actually called me personally when I was at KU to thank me for an article I wrote way back when, which I thought was very nice of him. But, no, when you're as a moribund franchise as we have been for the last decade, I mean, let's call it what it is. We've been the worst Power 5 school in Division 1 since, you know, the late 2000s. But that being said, I mean, listen, I was telling Aaron, basketball doesn't matter in this, okay? I mean, KU is the outlier of outliers in all of college sports when it comes to having a brand basketball, you know. I mean, arguably the greatest, the best, most consistent basketball program in college for the last 20 years. And no sniffs whatsoever. So until basically KU's play is this, they're gonna wait it out. They're all for the Big 12. If they want to extend, they want to expand, great. Because again, you can do a lot worse than U of H, UCF, BYU. And if BYU does latch on, that's a big get for them, right? Like if you can get BYU to latch on just because of that national brand and all the money that they've got behind them. And if you, like I said, I think U of H is kind of a done, I'm not going to say it's a done deal, but I think U of H would be foolish not to. If I'm U of H, though, my question is, what's the viability? Because I want to make sure we don't get a Monday morning surprise like, oh, by the way, these guys are leaving.
Yeah, that would be my big concern, too. That's my big concern, because you mentioned Kansas potentially moving to the Big Ten at any point could bring in a team like Iowa State, because I don't know that Iowa's governor is going to be cool with Iowa State being left out. Like, I don't know how that whole thing plays out with their state politics. Iowa's been in, they've been in different conferences
for a long time.
If you feel like Iowa State's going to, for a long, long time.
I was going to say, I mean, hell, they're in the Big Eight.
If you feel like Iowa State's going to get screwed, could they look over there to, if they're going to expand, could they add them? Kansas obviously makes a lot of sense. Now, by adding U of H and certainly right now, by adding U of H in Cincinnati, that's a big move from a basketball standpoint.
Oh, it's a huge
into
the
Big 12. But
let me ask you this, okay? I mean, you're a lifelong sports fan.
Yep.
Is it college football drives the day?
Yep.
Okay. I mean, let me ask you this. Did you watch the Minnesota-Ohio State game last night?
I did.
Okay. Let's fast forward 3 months.
I won't. Yeah. And okay. You're asking if I'm going to watch a regular season basketball game. And the answer is, trained to watch
conference tournament. Let's say KU and Kentucky
tournament.
You're on.
Yeah, I might watch that on a Saturday afternoon.
Might.
Sure.
Might. After, you know, depending upon what else you, but again.
Depends on what I got going.
It's not top of mind, right? You're going to take care of your kids. You're going to take care of whatever, anything
but this
else you
isn't
got going.
This isn't a college basketball region. You're right. You're right about that.
And so that's the thing, right?
But the money, the potential money it drives is what makes, it is a revenue generating sport.
It is, to some extent.
But you're right. The conversations that would be had in ACC territory versus basketball ad schools versus here was way different conversations.
Oh, absolutely.
It's barely a secondary topic, right?
Really?
I'm saying if we're bringing it up about a reason to join a conference, you're not talking about boy the basketball this and that. But I think universities.
Couldn't you argue right now, U of H? Think about it this way, real quick. Here we are, about a couple years removed from the Tom Herman era, and I think the U of H basketball program is in better shape right now than the U of H football program.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, U of H basketball for sure. Yeah.
So right, and so that's what I'm saying.
You mean
so
like Final Four team?
Exactly.
Yeah,
right.
Absolutely.
I mean, and let's call it what it is. I mean, hell, you got little Master P coming in a couple of years. You know, he did a great job of recruiting on the transfer portal this past season. So
right.
You know, but that's my point is that for basketball perspective, I mean, you know, it's as great as U of H basketball's been. It's the football program we're talking about that's going to be the boon to the Big 12.
Yeah. No, there's no question.
You know?
That's the actual truth to it.
That's
Speaking
it.
Speaking of college football, you know, I get fajitas the first weekend of college football. I go out, I get fajitas, and I go enjoy them, and I start watching at 11 o'clock, whatever my 11 o'clock game I have action I have, whatever the case may be. I'm going to do it on my Texas Custom Patio patio. That's what I've been doing the last 4 years since I've had that patio. I go out there. I watch my games. I've got my food. Everything's perfect. It's set up just the way I like it. I got my big screen TV. I got my speakers in the in the gabled ceiling that the roof that was built. It's got so much space. I'm actually going to have the fans replaced with something that's bigger and stronger. But Texas Custom Patios, they do an incredible job of taking your space outside and turning it into an outdoor living space or an outdoor kitchen or just a great big second home for you if that's what you want to do and hang out in your spot. You want to add misters out there, they can do that for you. No matter what you want to do, Texas Custom Patios can do it. The work that they do is astonishing. Go to tcplance.com and check out the before and afters of my backyard, and you'll see they can do the same thing for you. You don't have to have a big mega house to put together an amazing patio. TexasCustomPatios.com.
You are listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, this is The Bench with John Granato and Lance Erline on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
What is your view on what's happening in that front?
Well, not quite sure. We were accused unfairly, and ESPN has been accused unfairly of trying to somehow destroy the Big 12. Ridiculous. And one writer wrote that I had contacted five Big 12 ADs. I haven't contacted one. Just, made it up out of whole cloth. So we don't appreciate that, Paul. Beyond that, it came up again. Bob Bowlsby doubled down with Dennis Dodd the other day. I thought, frankly, we'd been beyond that. But in any event, I don't know what's going on at this point. We're trying to strengthen and fortify our conference in any way we can. We've heard all the rumors. As you know, Paul, there'll be a rumor a day, maybe a dozen rumors a day regarding realignment. What's the Big 12 going to do? What are they not going to do? What are the other conferences going to do? They said at this point, it doesn't look like the other conferences are going to do anything, but that's for now. You never know what's going to happen down the road. Realignment, Paul, as you know, has played out often in the past over a few months or a few years, so you're just not sure what's going to happen. But I hope our schools realize that we're a strong, dynamic, stable conference, forward-looking. We've got tremendous potential. We have the best media partner in the world in ESPN. And I hope that they realize that and that they don't, they don't decide to do anything else. We know that we could be targets, but we'll see what happens.
That's Mike Oresko, conference commissioner with the American Conference. I don't blame him for being pissed off. You hear he's not in a good mood about it. I mean, he's having his whole conference is going to get turned upside down. Fred Davis.
Welcome to college, baby. Yeah. Welcome to college. I mean, listen, what do you think the Big 12 and every other conference? I mean, where's this dude been for the last 15 years?
I know.
I mean, this is what college sports has devolved into.
But think about this, though, Fred. Freddie Davis with me for the next 2 hours. We got to. Actually, Mana Martina is going to join us, a UFC fighter from Houston who got his first win this last weekend. But this is kind of crazy, though. If you go back to COVID, and here's what a conference commissioner is being hit with right now. Oh my God, COVID! We're not going to have anybody in the fans. We depend on football money to fund all of our athletic programs. We're going to have to cut this. We're going to have conference. Oh wait, there's social unrest and social justice policies that we are going to have to or initiatives that we need to implement, and our players are coming to us and okay, we got to do that too. And they wait, what?
NIL
conferences are NIL.
NIL.
So wait, what's the deal now?
We're going to pay you too.
So our starting tackle can have a deal with a barbecue place.
Yeah.
Okay, but that's legal. Now our swimming team. Hold on, we got two teams that want to leave our conference. Like this is like an avalanche of stuff. In a year and a half, basically 18 months, they're getting hit with a monster amount of change and alterations to what the schedule has been.
I think back. You ever seen, you remember that movie King of New York? with Christopher Walken. Okay, there's a line in there where he's just been released from prison, and he's he's going around, and he goes
early on, right?
And he goes to the one dude, and he says, you've been getting fat while everybody else starved in the streets. Okay, that's what this is right now.
Yeah.
Okay, that's what this is right now. Okay, well, college ADs, administrators, NCAA, you guys have been getting fat while everybody else starved in the streets. Okay, welcome to your comeuppance now. Okay, nobody. I don't feel bad for anybody in college athletics, okay? Kids are finally starting to get paid, all right? And now the reality is, AAC, Power of Five, Group of Five, whatever you want to call them, welcome to what the rest of college sports has been, welcome to what SEC. You guys want to play with the big boys? Guess what? Now you're in it. Now you're in it, okay? And the reality is, nobody wants to see the AAC. That's just it. Nobody. Outside of U of H, I don't care about Bowling Green.
Spoken like a true Kansas elitist.
Hey, I'm spoken like a true Big 12, big college sport. Because from
if you're a college football fan, let's just be real. You want mega conferences and you want mega football.
You do.
Unless you are an alumni of a university.
That's it.
That's the one difference.
Unless you're
every alumni looks at it differently.
Oh, absolutely. Listen,
the general fan like me, like a fan for hire, that I'm out there trying to watch the best games.
Yeah,
I'm looking for good games.
That's why
I want to text the Texas A&M play right away. Oh no. I want that right away. And those fan bases at first, A&M didn't want to play Texas. Then Texas didn't want to play A&M, and I'm like, would you two dumbasses
just play
so I can watch?
Dude, I've been sitting here waiting. We've been waiting for years to see KU Missouri for the last, 7-8 years. We're finally going to get it this year in basketball, and we're going to, run them off the court, but that's another story for another time. But, the point is, I get it, right? I mean, listen, unless you're a Sam Houston State Bearcat, shout out to my Lamar Cardinals over there in the 409. You guys know what time it is. But, like you said, outside of that, again, if you're a fan for hire, and trust me, as a KU football fan, I've been a fan for hire for the last decade or so I get it. But that's... Listen, we knew a decade ago, Lance, this is where this was going. Okay? They told us a decade ago.
Yeah, but it didn't seem real.
It didn't. It didn't. And I'll tell you what happened.
They didn't tell us Oklahoma and Texas were going to the SEC.
No, we didn't see that. We didn't see that one coming. We did not see that one coming.
We thought they were going to maybe the Pac-12.
Listen, I thought the Big 12 was... I've been saying for a few years now, especially after the Tom Herman came in and did his thing over at U of H, I've been saying for a while... Big 12 needs to grab U of H. Mm-hmm. I've been saying that for years now because I just feel like with Houston, obviously you got the sixth biggest media market in the country.
Right.
You've got a school that's not necessarily considered a commuter school anymore. It's actually, and again, I'm a U of H dad now, so I can, show my props because that's a whole different. Now, I will ask you this, all right, and where
my
you stand on this.
My dad coached at U of H, by the way. He went to Cotton Bowls as a coach. Like, I grew up as a U of H fan when I was younger.
Absolutely. So here's my question for you. As a U of H dad, I'm a rock chalk to the end.
Yeah.
I cannot bring myself to wear U of H gear.
So my wife is a Longhorn, right?
Okay.
She finished Texas in 3 years. Monster Longhorn will cuss me out when the games are going on. Cusses the whole house out.
Yeah, as she should.
She hasn't liked the coach in the entire time we've been married, almost 20 years. She's hated every coach that Texas has had. Like a true Texas fan. And my son is a senior this year. And he's looking at different schools, but he's kind of like an A&M. And her disappointment level, I can't tell you the level of disappointment she had.
Now that A&M's that I can support.
That's a like for you, I can see you supporting U of H. That's not really.
I know I can support it. I just can't bring myself to wear their gear.
Yeah, I get that.
You know
I get
what I'm saying?
I get that. 100% get
I'm
that.
Trying.
My wife already said I will never wear anything Aggie.
Nor should
if you go
she.
To A&M.
Nor should
I'm not
she.
Doing this. I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
And I'm also fine with that. I understand
well,
how deep that runs. But I'm also, I'm just rolling with like whatever,
What are you going to say?
First
what
of all,
you
I'm looking
do?
For if you get a scholarship, a merit scholarship, that's where I'm like, where are you going? Oh, you're going to St. Louis University is where you're going.
Oh, you're
going
to be a Billiken. Okay.
All right. Look at this. I didn't know we were going to be. Look at this.
We're Creighton Blue Jays.
Alcorn State's giving you a full ride. Looks like you're going to be an Alcorn State Owl or whatever they
whatever
are.
They
I'm looking
are.
At the. I'm looking at the scholarship.
R.I.P. Steve McNair. All right,
that's
right. We go.
Uh-oh, Mississippi Valley State, home of Willie Totten at one point. Jerry Rice.
That's right. Yeah. You know what? There's in Delaware a free ride to the
Delaware.
Delaware.
That's it.
Go
fine.
ahead.
Fine.
I don't know what
care
you won't
what
get in trouble because there's
is.
Nothing in Delaware.
Yeah, Delaware, that's fine.
Hey,
oh,
don't sleep on those New England states, though. I'm going to tell you right now.
You say
there's no trouble to get into as somebody who spent 3.5 years in Maine.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, there's plenty of trouble to get into.
Oh, I like New England, too, by the way.
At least somebody does.
I like you and George Bush. I visited Portland, Maine, like this May, and it was beautiful.
Oh, no, it's great.
I didn't stay there for a whole...
Yes, it's great in May.
I'm not trying to go there in the winter.
Yeah, let me stay there for 3 plus years.
I'm not trying to go to Chicago in January.
No.
I like going in the summer or the fall. It's 820 Icebreaker right here. Mano Martinez, UFC fighter from here in Houston. He picked up his first win. First fight, first win. And unfortunately, though, he lost his coach, Saul Solis. All of Houston did. The godfather of MMA here in Houston. So we'll visit with Mana coming up here in just a second. It's 8:30 here on the bench. ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5. The godfather of Houston sports radio. The preeminent NFL draft analyst. You found The Bench on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
29-28, Kanachi. And Junichiro Camijo scores the contest. 29-28 for the winner by split decision. Mana boy, Martinez.
I'm here with Mano Martinez. It's obviously an extremely emotional moment for you, my friend. Take your time, buddy. Congratulations. You got inside this octagon tonight with a lot of weight on your shoulders, a lot of emotion. And that's how the fight went too early on. You were eating a lot of shots, but you overcame that adversity. And here you are with your hand raised as a UFC fighter. I'm just going to ask you how you're feeling right now, man.
As I told you in the pre-fight interview, I was going to try my best to keep it in before the fight. And obviously, let it all pour out, and it just did. First and foremost, I want to thank the man upstairs. And, you know, my coach, Saul, of course, is dedicated to him. Everything he did for me to help me turn my career around. So I'm just very thankful and blessed to have him in my life in the period of time that I did. And I'm just very thankful.
Leo Mana Martinez from right here in the city of Houston. That was his initial reaction right after the fight. It was his first fight in the UFC. Mick Maynard, the matchmaker, lives here in Houston and recognized he came from Houston. These are his roots. When he came as a matchmaker, he started here, I want to say with Legacy. And he made his way into the UFC, and he brought Houston with him. And a talented striker, Mana Martinez, joins us right now. We were very happy to get you on, Mana. I watched the fight. I know I'm not the only one that said this. You know Saul Solis would have – I know Saul a little bit. I got to know Saul back in the day, and I was friends with him for a while. Saul would have been in your ass during that fight because you weren't letting those hands go early on. You know that he would have jumped on you. I know you know that.
Oh yeah, I'm glad you knew Coach Saul a little bit, and going back and watching the fights a few times that I did, I can definitely hear him in my ear, and you know, his certain coaching style would have definitely gotten to me, and probably motivated me a little bit more to finish him. But yeah, I definitely heard him, and he definitely would have been giving me some different instructions.
Well, for people who don't know, there may be some people who didn't know this and who knew about Saul, maybe you don't know who Saul is. Saul Solis is one of the godfathers of MMA. I've been an early adapter to UFC since the mid-90s when I first saw it, and Saul was the first guy I had in studio, along with Mark Kerr, who was the Mark Kerr was one of the top fighters in UFC and then into Pride in Japan. And I got to know Saul back in about 2000 and went to dinner with he and Rico Rodriguez and Tito Ortiz way back when Rico was the champion. And Saul was a guy who was at the early stages of MMA and really did a lot to build the sport here in Houston. He had his own fights, and he was a guy who was very influential for a lot of fighters. And so let's get right to that before we get into the fight. When you lose a guy who is the voice in your ear and the guy who gives you direction. Was there ever a point where you were so broken down emotionally, and then there was, you know, COVID scares in your camp as well? Was there ever a point where you just thought this first UFC fight just isn't going to happen for me?
For sure, it definitely crossed my mind. To be honest with you, I tried my best emotionally to keep it all together, and with the passing of Coach Saw, obviously, it all poured out after my victory and after my win. But prior to it, there was definitely a thought in my mind that, man, is my UFC debut meant for this year, or should I wait till next year? And it definitely crossed my mind, but I knew everything would come together and everything would be meant to be, and that victory was solely and specifically for him. So he would have wanted me to definitely go out there and fight and, you know, not be mourning at his funeral or sad or, yeah. But, yeah, it definitely crossed my mind, and I'm very thankful that I was able to pull through with the fight and especially the victory.
Yeah, give me an idea of – I'm kind of curious what it was like when you heard that the UFC was calling, that this was going to be your first fight. What was that phone call like when you found out that I'm going to be fighting in the UFC, which is the highest level that you can fight in mixed martial arts?
So originally, I was able to earn my contract a few months back in my hometown through Fury Fighting Championships, and Dana White was looking for a fight here in Houston, and I knew my time was coming. So that fight was a quick one; it was about 30 seconds. And when my manager texted me about a week or two later, I was excited. I was stoked. I got the contract. And, you know, it's like a dream come true, especially with all the time, effort, hard work that I put in. It was amazing to see it. And you know, I was originally supposed to fight not this past weekend, but the weekend prior, and that fell through. So, again, going back to your other question, I didn't know if it was all going to happen, but it did happen. And when I first found out, I was just super excited, and I couldn't really believe it. But once those octagon doors closed last weekend, it all came true, and I definitely believe y'all.
Hey, quick question for you, man of boy, Fred Davis here. And, you know, I've kind of jumped on the MMA bandwagon here as of late. I mean, I'm 40 years old. I grew up being a big boxing fan, and so I've got a new appreciation for the work you guys do. But what I'm most fascinated by, and anybody in a combat sport, is, you know, I'm looking at your record. Like I say, you're 9-2. Congrats again on the UFC win. But, you know, you've fought five fights in the last 5-6 years. How do you, and whether it's you or anybody else in the UFC or MMA as a whole, how do you guys, you know, because of the sporadic nature of these fights, and, you know, ultimately you're trying to get to that, you know, you're trying to get that UFC, you're trying to get that big payday, how do you stay motivated? I mean, how do you stay in it, and what keeps you going when, you know, you may not fight for a year, or you may not, you know, you may be on hold for, you know, TBD? How have you persevered through all that and kept going?
The way I persevere through it is just looking to the bigger picture. And I know it's a long time from now, and I'm definitely going to have to work my way up there. But it's holding that gold and seeing it around my waist, which is, of course, the championship belt. That's what drives me, motivates me. And, again, I said I know it's a long time coming, but that's the ultimate goal. And, honestly, if that's not any other fighter's goal, and they don't see them for that, then I don't know if they're meant for this sport or why they're even fighting, to be honest. But
makes sense.
You know, to each his own. I don't want to speak on another person or for another person, but that's my main goal, and I know I'm not getting any younger by the day. So
true.
I'm 25 years old, and I want to get it while I'm still young, and, you know, while my body's still thankfully fresh, and yeah, just chasing the goal, man.
Amen to that. And hey, you're 25, so like I said, don't beat yourself up, bro. You're 25. You're okay. You're doing all right. Trust me.
Yeah, but when you're 25, you feel like life's passing you by. I mean, it's a different perspective.
Let me be 25 again.
I know. Mono Martinez joins us right now. We just wanted to get you on and give you props. For number one, I also wanted to give props to Saul Solis, who truly was the godfather of MMA here in Houston. But you're a bantamweight with some heavy, heavy hands, and that's something in lower weight divisions. When you've got knockout power, that's something that draws the attention of not just Mick Maynard, but obviously Dana White as well. So Metro Fight Club representing the city of Houston, we definitely appreciate you joining us, and we also appreciate the fact that you're a Houston fighter who's coming up, and we'll be following your career from this point forward. So thanks for joining us this morning, Mana.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. And, I truly appreciate you knowing Coach Saul's background and, his history and how much he's done for the sport, not only in Houston but Texas, and how well he was recognized around the world. I remember him telling me stories about how he would go to Japan, with his fighters and how they'd recognize him and things of that sort. So he was definitely known worldwide, not just in the state of Texas or just in the Houston community. And I appreciate you really pinpointing that. And
One of the things I want to mention is he was one of those guys who, you have people who will tell you what you want to hear. They just get along, Freddie. They'll say, they'll just try to act nice and play nice and say that. Saul just didn't have a filter like that. If he thought something, he would tell you. No, he would tell you something. Am I lying, Mana? He was a guy that would tell you exactly what he was thinking.
No, that's exactly what I like to hear. And Coach Saul was as real as they come. Never sugarcoated anything.
Never.
And again, like I said, as real as they come. And man, when I needed to be treated like a fighter, he treated me like a fighter. And he was able to flip the switch, because when I needed to be treated like a son or, someone super close to him, he treated me like a son. So there was just always that true love there, and, that straightforwardness from him. But, man, as real as they come, and that's hard to find these days, because like you said, some of these coaches will, you did great, when realistically you had a bad performance. And I know I didn't have the best performance this past weekend, and he would have told me, hey, we're back to the drawing boards on Monday. Hey, you need to fix this, but that wasn't a good job. But yeah, man, as real as they come.
He would have told you, let your effing hands go. Throw combinations, get him in there and knock his ass out. He's 41, yes, you're 25. Exactly. He would have, stop getting kicked at that inside kick. No, Saul would have, yeah. So anyway, well, listen. Definitely shout out to the great Saul Solis, but also shout out to you. And
absolutely.
Thanks for making Houston proud on your first UFC fight. And we're looking forward to many more wins in your future.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you guys for having me.
Hey, let me ask you a quick question. My radio partner, John Granato, my full-time one, he's going to be coming back soon. Would you in December maybe be able to make it out to our Christmas party and put him in some type of, I know you're a striker, but just put him in some kind of chokehold, just like a little chokehold.
A rear naked choke?
Yeah, just a little quick chokehold.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay.
I think you start a knockout booth with him. I tell you what, just do a knockout booth, and then people can, for their charity or whatever, and then you just walk up and
just
knock them out.
Just little chokes on everyone, and they get a tap and just see what it feels like for 2 seconds.
Punching the
chest.
Will
you come do that in December if we have our Christmas party?
I'm down. I'm definitely down with that. Or, you see some boxers or that boxer where he brings, a body shield, and they do that challenge.
Oh,
I could bring a little body shield and maybe throw a secret TA on. I don't know. We'll figure something out.
No, as long as somebody's getting punched.
I just want to see Mana Boy beating up people at a Christmas party.
He said we'll figure it out, so we'll see. Hey, Mana, thanks for joining us today. We appreciate it, and congratulations.
I appreciate it. Thank you. Yeah, definitely let me know, though.
All right. Now, don't worry. We're going to take you.
He's
ready
now.
It ain't no joke now. It's really going to happen.
See, you should have started the conversation off with that.
I know. I appreciate it. But just so you know, it's really going to happen. Hey, I want to tell you something else that's really going to happen.
And our entire legal team.
Am I wrong?
Right now,
all we need is one.
The legal forms
we just
that they
need
right,
one
out.
Form to get signed. That's
sign
all
waiver.
We need.
Sign a waiver.
Just get somebody to do a good waiver, and it's in. We're going to do it. I had Eve Edwards one time choke Jeremy Foster. Eve Edwards was a great, great fighter, about the same weight class, I think, and he choked Jeremy Foster in about half a second. Mm. And Jeremy's like, oh!
Well, hell, you know, a buddy of ours got choked out live on the air and went viral around the world.
Wait,
Alex got choked out by Tito Ortiz on the air.
Oh, really? Nice.
Oh, you never saw that video when it went viral? It was on every sports blog, and it was radio hosts dumb enough to let Tito Ortiz put him in a chokehold while he's on the air.
And Tito's the guy who might hang on to it a little longer.
I mean, he was out. Well, Tito is so much more massive than Alex. When Alex went out, instead of dropping him, he laid him down like he was a little baby and then just patted him on the chest to wake him up.
See, that was nice. Hilarious.
Well, that was nice. Yeah, I don't know. Tito's a sweetheart. Who knew? I want to tell you who else is a sweetheart. My friends over at Allstate Siding and Windows. You see how that works? 50 years in the business. They've been in business 50 years. It's family owned and operated the entire time. People work in their family. It's their name. It means something to them. And so you're not going to get half-ass work. You're not going to get a bunch of slappies out there doing installations. They have great crews for installations. They retrofit the windows to your window. It's double strength, double pane windows. That are built for hurricane strength winds at 130 miles an hour. But they have actual hurricane strength windows that you can have installed and that must be installed if you get all the way down near the coast. But these windows, that's kind of how they roll. They get the best out there, and they've got different windows you can get. But you're going to see a quieter home. You're going to see much more energy efficiency. That was the first thing that stood out to me, is that when you get retrofit windows, you get – there's no drafts, there's no air getting in and out, and it really helps keep the cool inside during the summer. 25% off windows right now when you upgrade your windows through Allstate Siding and Windows. You can also buy 10 windows right now. They'll give you two free, and they're giving you $2,000 off of complete siding jobs. And putting new siding on your home can be one of the best moves you can make to really upgrade the looks of your home. Home and virtual appointments are available. Go to the website at allstatesidingandwindows.com or call them at 832-204-1936.
This is The Bench on ESPN 97.5. Welcome back to The Bench with John Granato and Lance Erline on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Deshaun's best leverage. Deshaun's best leverage is to go to the Texans and say, you know what? I'm ready to play.
Yeah,
put me in, coach.
Right.
I'm ready to play.
Right.
Okay? Because they don't want to do that. They don't want to play him now because they're determined to trade him. They're determined to move on. You play him and he gets hurt, hop, there goes the trade value for Deshaun Watson. He tore his ACL as a rookie. And he plays a very physical and at times reckless, loose style. If he wants to force this to a head, his play is to go to the team and say, hey, wait a minute. You can't. I'm on the roster. You can't deactivate me every week. You can't. You cannot. That was one of the Terrell Owens rules that was worked into the CBA in 2006. You can't just say you're on basically a paid suspension.
Right.
Now, it may force the NFL to put him on paid leave, but that's the thing that he could do to upset the apple cart now if he would choose to do it. Say to the Texans, you know what? I'm ready to play some football.
That's Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk Network, and two things stood out. Did he say the Texans tore Deshaun's ACL as a rookie?
Yeah.
I don't think the Texans tore anything, number one. And number two, I think Mike's got it wrong. Like, okay, if Deshaun says I want to play, Freddie, all right, I'll ask you this, because I know John's answer might be different than yours. Mm-hmm. Maybe it'll be the same. But if Deshaun said, you know what, I want to play. Let's say he goes there. Number one, he hasn't put the time in and practiced. They may say, well,
it's all right. Would
they play him and make it and deactivate him?
You'd be
have to start him.
You're not playing him already.
It up before.
You know, I do radio with Henry Thomas, right?
Yep.
And you know, Henry spent 14 years in the National Football League, played 217 games over the course of his 4 years or 14 years. Okay. He's been saying from the jump, unless there's something wrong with him physically, he's your quarterback. He's on your roster. You play him.
Period. That's the same thing Bucky Brooks told me. He played in the league, worked for three different teams.
Exactly.
He said, you paid him, you gave him $27 million signing bonus. You play him.
That's it.
And I know John's counter has been, well, he doesn't want to play for you. Well, we don't care what he wants.
Okay.
We don't care what you want. We paid you because you wanted this money and we gave it to you. The flip side is, well, Deshaun might fake an injury or might, quote unquote, get injured. And maybe that would be the case.
Well,
I think it's, you know, I see both sides, because you could say, well, if Deshaun's not going to be here long term, you don't want him getting hurt. You don't want him, you losing, you know, what if he tears an ACL in the middle of the season and you don't have the same trade value?
Yeah, what if he goes out and, you know, sodomizes 10 more masseuses, okay, or asks to get sodomized 10 more times?
Never,
I mean, you know, this Deshaun Watson thing, like everything else in society these days, it seems like, has been beat to death, all right? The dude's on the roster. He's physically capable. The NFL has dropped the ball on this by leaving this in the Texans, pardon the pun, wheelhouse, as far as having them to be stuck with this and saved. How he's not on the exempt list at this point is beyond embarrassing for the National Football League. Okay, you stuck guys on for less. My man's got 22 cases, whether you agree, believe, he said, she said, or not. That's irrelevant at the point. The bottom line is he's got 22 outstanding civil cases of sexual assault pending. Chances are that a lot of it's going to get thrown out, but the reality is it's there. And for a National Football League that likes to tell us, oh, wait a minute, so Zeke Elliott can't grab boobs in public.
Right.
Okay.
That's usually a rule.
Which we saw.
That's usually a rule.
Okay. Grabbed her boobs in public, all saw, but yet, you know, getting diddled by 22 women, go ahead, let it slide. We'll be okay. It's Deshaun Watson. I don't understand where the line is here.
Well, the line hasn't been drawn yet. It's going to get drawn.
It's got to.
The line's going to get drawn, but the faster you draw the line, the faster the Texans can start to make their plans. To Mike's point,
But do you think anybody's trading for him, though?
Not right. I think they could. Oh, no. I think they would take a chance with Deshaun Watson if they had two things happen. Number one, they knew they're getting Deshaun for 60 to 70 cents on the dollar. And number two,
but Kasario ain't doing that.
They thought no, and that's the key.
And I'm okay with that.
Bill O'Brien would have just said, "Get him out of here," and then there would have been a terrible trade.
Yeah, but I got to believe though, if Bill O'Brien was still here, we wouldn't be in this mess.
Yeah, you might be right. You might be right.
That's his boy. What?
No.
That's his boy.
Wouldn't be in this mess.
Well, as far as
Bill O'Brien's the f up that did all this stuff.
I'm talking about Deshaun wanting out.
I still think if Deshaun's biggest issue is that the Texans are a joke and that they're not ever going to be any good.
Yeah.
Bill O'Brien was a big part of ruining the roster, and the ownership is still the same ownership.
Yeah.
It's still Cal McNair, who is basically incompetent. And you're not asked to do a lot as an owner, other than not get bamboozled by Bill O'Brien and Jack Easterby.
Yeah.
And he failed that miserably.
He did.
But to this point, before we get to a break, I think that I do think that people would be willing to pay for Deshaun Watson, trade for him right now, but they would get so much built in. You have to give back the picks if this happens.
Yeah.
We're only going to give you don't do that if you're the Texans.
No,
you
absolutely not.
Wait until after the combine next year. You don't have to be in a hurry.
So then play him.
Don't sell your stock now when you know the stock is going to go higher. And that's a question is it's not a question because they obviously have no intention of playing him. They have no intention. But would that improve his? I disagree with Mike fundamentally, Florio, that I don't think that improves his leverage. Just because he says he wants to play, I think the Texans would say, no, we're going to make you, you know.
I think it improves the Texans' leverage.
You're not the number one. No, absolutely. If they wanted to trade him, they could. But I don't think it improves Deshaun's leverage for getting out there. This is still a Texans decision.
Oh, it absolutely is.
Never, ever confuse this. And it's never been anything but the Texans' decision.
No.
It's everyone acts like Deshaun's got all the leverage.
What leverage does he have?
No, he doesn't.
I get he's got the whole trade, you know, I can shoot down a trade aspect of it, but at the same time, too, as long as Rusty Harden's on the payroll for him, he has no leverage. Okay? As long as Rusty Harden is still his number one guy, as long as those two words are synonymous, that he's got zero leverage as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, but he will be, I mean, to me, in a perfect scenario, a perfect world, I wait until after the season's over, let some new teams pop up. Oh, look, Atlanta's interested all of a sudden. Maybe Sean wants to go to Atlanta with Matt Ryan being a cap casualty.
Yeah.
Oh, Pittsburgh's interested. Oh, I don't think he's going to – it's been leaked also that he's not interested in Philadelphia. I had heard that last year. Where he wants to go is San Francisco, that's out, Denver, and Miami. Denver and Miami definitely could be on the board next year.
Oh, absolutely.
But throwing in a third team, and I'm telling you, you're going to get what you want for Deshaun Watson if you hold tight. I think the suspension will be 6 games. That's my guess. I don't think there's going to be criminal charges. I'm guessing
on all
these.
No, I agree with
that
too.
And if that's the case, I think there's NFL teams who are going to look at precedent. They're going to look at past occurrences, and they're going to say, we're willing to take a chance.
Absolutely.
And I think that's why they would trade for him earlier than I would be comfortable trading for him if I were a GM. However, if you're the Texans, you wait until your price is met. You set your house price and you say, we're not selling for less. you want to give us this price, or if we want to create a market and you want to go over that,
yeah,
we're fine with it. But we're not selling our house until we get exactly what we're asking
for. Nor should you. And Caserio, who's a legit GM, as we're finding out, people can say what they want about whether they think, you know, the Patriot way, what have you. I'm impressed with what he's done so far. He looks like a bona fide, legit, real deal GM.
If I were to give you an opportunity to talk about the Houston Rockets in the next 3 minutes, would you be interested?
Sure.
Serious question.
Absolutely.
Okay, the Rockets in 3 minutes.
Absolutely.
9 o'clock, ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5.